Everybody, welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin, and I'm joined every week by my very good friend, my own chocolate bear, Mr. Gerald Goodridge. What's up, G?
Not too much, Ray. Excuse me, listeners and or Raymond, if my voice sounds like I've been chain smoking for six straight days. I just took 61 middle school and high schoolers to camp, came back, and got a free burrito out of that, which was nice. Yeah, the lady at Chipotle hooked me up. But no, it was a great week. But I'm ready to talk some nerd stuff. Haven't been able to do that much the last few days.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about this, but I, at one point in my life, was a teacher. So you have my deepest sympathies and empathies and other all pathies that exist.
It was a fantastic time. I had a great time with the kids. It's just, you get about 4 hours of sleep a night, and so your voice never really recovers from a night of running around, screaming, playing games.
But you would be really good at Bonnie Raitt karaoke right now, so you have to take the good with the bad.
Definitely.
So today we're going to talk about, on this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about Warcraft, which is setting records in China, and I guess talk a little bit about what we think it's going to do here in the States. Talk about some video games, which is something that you and I haven't done, which is surprising because we both love video games. And then we'll talk a little bit about the best Marvel movies, or at least our favorite Marvel movies. And that kind of came about because there's a list that we'll talk about, a really, really bad list from the Hollywood Reporter ranking the best Marvel movies. And they did a terrible job. So we thought we would take another shot at it. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about Warcraft, which set the two-day box office record in China. It beat. Did you see what had held the record in China? Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
It was Furious 7.
That is surprisingly unsurprising.
Because apparently the Chinese people love Vin Diesel. I did not know that.
You could assume that, because who doesn't love Vin Diesel?
Sure, Vin Diesel and Kobe, huge in China. and Cristiano Ronaldo, CR7. Those are the three. Yeah. That's the triumvirate in China. Who knew? But anyway, Warcraft beat Vin Diesel, which is really surprising. It made $90 million in 2 days in China, which is huge. So it's a big deal. This movie, we've talked about it before, it looks terrible, but it's kind of got a Field of Dreams thing going, I think, where if you make it, the nerds will come and watch it. So are you thinking there's going to be big things this weekend?
I don't know about domestic, because the reviews have been so bad. If they were like middle of the road reviews, I think people would still want to make their own opinions on it, formulate their own opinions on it. But I think because the reviews have been pretty overwhelmingly negative, I don't know if the viewership is going to be able to overcome that. I do think there may be some curiosity viewers, some people that are just so curious to see what the heck this is to go see it. But it wouldn't be the first time that a movie franchise was kept afloat simply because the Chinese audience loved it. China's a huge market. And so I think we may see a situation in which we get a sequel to this film just because the Chinese audience loved it. I think that could be it. But again, I think we may get some looky-loos out of curiosity, some people that may just want to see what it's about because it's something new. And they may even see it because the reviews are so bad, because a lot of people go into it with the mindset of, well, it can't possibly be that bad. And so they'll make the decision to see the film. So I'm curious to see what it looks like. I'll probably be seeing it within the next couple of days, kind of as a train wreck kind of stop and watch situation. I know Ray is vehemently shaking his head.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to see this movie. There's no chance I'm going to see this movie. But I do think it is going to do better in the U.S. than maybe other people think. In fact, I play in a fantasy movie league. That's a thing where you try to pick the box office totals. And I was really tempted to play this movie this week because people are underestimating how well it will do simply because people love Warcraft a lot. I mean, can we say it's the biggest video game franchise in the world?
It was at one point. The subscribers have declined in the recent years, but I think at its height, there's nothing that could compare to it. I think you're going to get a lot of the people that were in World of Warcraft at its height going to see this simply because they want to support it. I've got a buddy from work who's a huge Blizzard guy who, in spite of all the reviews, is going to go check it out. So I think we're going to see a bigger number than what these reviews would indicate in most times.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And like I said, it's going to do better. The other thing I'd say about this is people always do like the things they're familiar with. It's one of the reasons why comic book movies have always worked.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why video game movies should work. And hopefully if we ever see a good one, maybe Assassin's Creed will be that movie. We'll see. Then I bet it would work. But I think that that's important. I do have two things I read about that have made me very upset. Thing one, there is never in the entire movie, no grunt or no peon says job done. Like job done. Nobody says that. That's deeply upsetting. Second, no sheep explode, which if you played before World of Warcraft, when everything went downhill, when it was just a real-time fun game, you played Warcraft 2, then, and it wasn't just clicking on random boxes and health bars. I yet to figure out why people, I tried to play Dota one time. It did not. Whatever. Like, I don't understand why people want to click on boxes, but yeah, it was a good time, but you would always click on the sheep until it bat, 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 and then it explode. That's good, wholesome fun for the whole family. That's the kind of stuff that should be in this movie. If you're going to make a terrible movie, at least wink and nod a little bit and let people have a little bit of fun, but it doesn't sound like they're going to do that. So
if the sequel happens, I feel like they're going to do more of that. Cause one of the criticisms is that there's not a lot of heart in this movie. So I think there'll be a lot more of that happening if a sequel does happen, thanks to the Chinese box office or the domestic box office. Cause again, it just opened today. We don't know what it's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be a peon somewhere saying job done. That's important, movie makers. That's important.
So the big subjects.
Since we're kind of talking about video games, like I said, we haven't talked about video games, which is kind of crazy. And I actually stumbled onto an interesting story that kind of branched off Warcraft. And it was in the New York Daily News. It was by Ebenezer Samuel, who writes the New York Daily News. He writes about the Giants, which is why I follow him. I follow him for my day job and also video games. So interesting, cool. Interesting mix.
But, he's one of our people.
Yeah, he's one of us, but one of us. So this is a really interesting list. He takes five video game franchises that he thinks would make the best movies that aren't already movies. And he lists a bunch of them. He lists Halo's, Legend of Zelda, Mass Effect, Deus Ex, and God of War, which we could talk about each one of those and which one we think is the most interesting and which one we like the best, which one we like the least. And then we'll talk a little bit of maybe some other ones. So looking at his list only, those five, which ones are you maybe the most interested in out of that list?
Anybody that knows me, I gravitate immediately towards Mass Effect. I think it'd be a nightmare to adapt simply because, or really because of the nature of it, it could be really easily because it's just about the universe. Mass Effect franchise is just about the universe. So there's not necessarily a story to adapt. I think if they tried to adapt that story, it would be a nightmare. But I don't think they would do that. I think Zelda would be even worse to adapt simply because there's so much weird lore tied into it that makes very little sense. And the timeline splits at the N64 version. And it's so weird. It could get terrible. But I think for me, Mass Effect, I think Deus Ex could also be really cool. People are into kind of the dark, gritty anti-hero thing nowadays. So I think that could be really, really interesting.
On your Legend of Zelda point, you know, if you think about how massive just Ocarina of Time is, just that one game is massive. You go literally from being a child to being, you know, a full-grown adult, and you go through, oh, the Water Temple. Oh. And you go through all of those things, and it's a massive, massive story. Like, it would require almost like a Lord of the Rings-esque investment in that franchise to make it work. And And I, you know, that'd be a reach. You mentioned Mass Effect. My only two questions are, is Yvonne Strazovsky, is she available? If so, I'm interested. And yeah. Am I able to play a Krogan? Because if that's the case, then I'm in.
I don't think you can have a Mass Effect film without a Krogan of some sort.
Oh, there needs to be a Krogan, but I'm specifically asking to be cast as the Krogan.
If you've seen Raymond, you know it'd be the most inspired casting you've ever seen.
I want to be a Krogan.
He would just need some green body paint and you're good to go.
I'm very interested in being a Krogan.
Yeah.
I agree with you completely about Deus Ex. Their game that's coming out now, I don't think it's out yet, I think it comes out soon, is essentially about an apartheid between the enhanced and enhanced and natural humans, which is a really interesting idea, which would allow you to attack social issues that we have today and also kind of look forward into the future when you look at some of the things they're doing with prosthetics. And I saw a really interesting prosthetic that doesn't really look like a human leg, but it functions much better like a human leg than some of the other prostheses. And so it's a really interesting idea. And I don't think that this enhanced human, I don't think that is such a far-fetched idea. I think that's something that we really could be dealing with in 30, 40 years. And it's a really interesting idea. I think the one I'm least excited about, well, I'm really not excited about Halo in this list because it's a space war. Like,
yeah, we've seen Space Marines before.
Exactly. I'm not interested in that. I mean, let's just make another Starship Troopers. I can get behind that.
Right.
100%. But God of War was... I mean, I love God of War. If you wanted to ask me, well, what's your favorite PlayStation 2 game? It could be God of War, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, and Red Faction 2. Like, that's the short list. So the God of War series was great. But we have seen gods in these movies so many times done so poorly that I just am turned off by the idea. We do not need another Gods of Egypt. We do not need another Clash of the Titans. Like, it has been done so, so poorly that I can't believe that they would do it, well. And going back to Vin Diesel, Samuel actually thinks that Vin Diesel should be the God of War, which would ensure they would do good in China, as we've learned.
Yeah, I think I think that's not a bad casting for Kratos. I mean, you got a swole, bald guy. What else do you need? just paint him white and let's go.
Yeah.
But I think on the flip side, something that I would be interested to see in that sort of fantasy genre, talking about Zelda, talking about God of War, I think a Dragon Age game could be really interesting. I think the world of Thedas could be really, really interesting to see on screen. Again, just kind of like the reasons I said for Mass Effect, because it's not necessarily one story you have to adapt. I think the stories are fantastic, but I think it's just about this sword and sorcery fantasy world. And that's one of the most popular things going right now. If you ask what the most popular show on TV is, a lot of people say Game of Thrones. And so I think it could be super successful, I think. Especially because there's not a hard and fast protagonist that you have to portray on screen. All you have to do is have a good character and go from there.
Yeah, I would say that Dragon Age would probably make a better television show than a movie because it is so vast. But the problem with that becomes how much sorcery and how much fantastical stuff are people willing to except on television, because that's a line that Game of Thrones has walked perilously through six seasons. So, six. I'm going with that one. But so we've seen them really struggle with that. So that would be the problem, because I mean, if Game of Thrones has some sorcery in it, I mean, there are people literally firing like Goku out there firing, you know, energy out of their hands. So I don't know how far that one goes. And we've seen stuff like that. You know, who could forget Ray Liotta's turn as the crazy warlord in The Name of the King with Jason Statham? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who could forget that? So and nobody bought into that and it looked cheesy and terrible. So I think that would be a tricky one. Some of the ones I'm interested in, Fallout, which actually might be happening, which is a cool idea. Mirror's Edge, which Catalyst is out this week. Actually, it just came out. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I love the original Mirror's Edge. And I think, I hope, just on as a side, I hope people remember that all this free running stuff that has permeated every game
started
with Mirror's Edge. Like that was such a, that was such an out there game in the way they moved. In fact, I think that DICE just created a movement engine and said, we don't know what game to build around this, but we need to use this. And that's kind of what Mirror's Edge was. And it was crazy. But I do think that, that could be interesting. A Red Dead would be awesome.
Yeah.
Especially if they could do it with 40 years ago, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be fantastic.
And then Half-Life.
Okay.
Which is actually happening, I think.
Yeah.
So I think, that would be great.
I think all of those could be really good. Another one that was on my list, two more. There's a game from a couple years back that's a kind of a cult hit, but it's called Beyond Good and Evil. And it's about an orphan who is trying to save these other orphans who are mysteriously disappearing. It's really good. It was free on Xbox Live a couple months back. But there's a really big twist ending, and it's kind of a jaw dropper. And she's got this really interesting cast of characters, and you really come to care about them. And so that story's fantastic. And then another one that I think would appeal to the Vin Diesel crowd would be like Gears of War. I think Gears of War, that series, that franchise, could make a very, very good like summer Michael Bay tentpole type of film. You get some big buff guys, some chainsaw jousting, and I think people will come to see it. You put a good I think you redo the Mad World trailer from Gears of War 2 for your Gears of War film, and I think the people would come in droves.
Yeah, I agree with you. But again, that's in that same Halo, Call of Duty mold.
Yeah.
We've seen all those movies before, but those characters are interesting.
Yeah.
And people know them, which is good.
Yep. I think that's the strength that Gears has over, I think, Halo and God of War, is that the characters do have some depth to them, in spite of them being these muscle-bound idiot jocks. I think there is a surprising amount of depth to those characters in the Gears franchise.
And while we're on video games, there was something I came across in my feed this week, which was a Starship shooter known as House of the Dying Sun, which is actually created by a guy who, speaking of Halo, used to work for Bungie. And it came across my feed. It was just a review of it. And I haven't had a chance to play it. It would have been my Don't Sleep if I had had a chance to play it. I haven't. But just looking at it, it looked cool, and I would recommend you go check it out. And I'll put a link in the show notes. But you know, I love Starship Shooters, the best, one of my favorite video games of all time. Still to this day, I still play it to this day. It's still on my PC. Is Descent Free Space, which I don't know if you ever played.
Yeah,
it's but it was a great game, and it's been really hard to find a space Starship shooter that really lives up to Descent Free Space since then. And this one looks like it is. But what I'm really interested in is the VR aspect of it. He was playing it on I forget which one. I don't think it was Vive he was playing it on. I think he was playing on Rift. But either one, it works on both of them. So either the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive. And I'm really interested in VR gaming and where it's going and kind of what we're seeing. So what are you thinking about VR gaming? Do you think this is something that's going to really become a part of everyday gamer life, or is this something that's just going to be a passing fad like it has been in the past?
I think if they can find a way to make it more accessible for your general baseline consumer, you know, I always think of the grandma going into Walmart trying to buy one of these for her grandson for Christmas. And I think it would be a supremely confusing situation for Nana to go into Walmart try to purchase one of these. So I think if they can make it more accessible for consumers, if they can make it easy where if I go into the store and I have an Xbox and I need to get the VR for Xbox, it just says Xbox VR. I don't have to know that the Xbox One and the Oculus Rift are the two compatible pieces of hardware. Because I think that is where it stops being accessible. But conceptually, I think it's fantastic, especially with the way video games are trending now in specific genres. I think first-person shooters, obviously, are probably your bread-and-butter market. I think your Starfighters are also, or something like No Man's Sky, where it's just space exploration, could be really, really cool. And I also think, obviously, your driving sims are going to be games where you're bread-and-butter. But I think anything games have become such an immersive experience. I remember when Modern Warfare 2, or if, excuse me, first Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare came out, and I played it on my dad's wall-sized projector and nearly had a panic attack during the opening mission. And I think something like that in a VR setting could just change somebody's world.
How can you tell me the truth? How many times did it take you to beat the tutorial on the first Modern Warfare?
I got through it the first time. Thank you.
You're a liar. So
I may or may not, my heart may or may not have been racing by the end of it. That jump from the boat to the helicopter, bro, everything clinched up. But I think really the nuts and bolts of this is got to be accessible, which then would allow units to be sold of games. Because I think that's the bottom line. If units are sold, then people are going to keep making the game. If units aren't sold, I think back to the Kinect. The Kinect is actually a really cool concept, but it wasn't very accessible. It didn't sell any units. People stopped making games. So I think that's really when push comes to shove. If making a VR game becomes financially viable, then they'll make VR games. I think that's what it is.
No, I agree with that 100%. And like you said, I have a Kinect sitting on top. I actually turn around and look at it. I have a Kinect sitting on top of my TV. I can't remember the last thing I used it for, or last time I used it not to change channels or change apps or whatever. It's just, and I have a few games. It's just not the same. So I think that you're 100% right on that. I did see a piece of technology, and I've seen this a couple times, that since we're talking about VR, I think is interesting. It's made by a company called Virtuix or Virtuex, and it's called the Omni. And they have working prototypes of it. You can pre-order them now, but they're not, I don't believe they're in full production yet. But it's this really cool standalone system. And I think to your point, that's really important, that I buy this piece of you know, furniture, this machine, and that allows me to do VR stuff. And I think that that's the kind of thing that'll really help in the future. And what it has on it is it kind of looks, the best way I've had to describe it is it kind of looks like a baby walker. You know how it has that little halo that's around your hips, and you have a little harness that you're wearing, and that harness allows you to move freely and turn 360 degrees. And then underneath you is this kind of surface that's all kind of leads to the center. There's a small flat spot you can stand on the center, but the rest of it's a cone, almost looks like a little sink. And I guess it looks like they're wearing something like bowling shoes, so you don't have much resistance, but it allows you to run. So you're moving your feet just like you'd be running. If you move your feet faster, you run faster in the game. And so it offers 360 degree movement. It allows you to run and stand and jump and do all of those things. And it's a really cool idea. And the thing that I like about it, and the reason I think that it could work, is because it is, like you said, I'm not buying an Xbox. I'm going in and I'm buying an Omni. That is the machine I'm buying for my grandson, is an Omni. And you can imagine that in 10 years, you'll look around houses in the country and there will just be one of these standing there. And so it's kind of it's a really cool idea. And I think that that's really the future of virtual reality. It would all have to be, like you said, integrated together, so we all really understand, you know, what we're looking at and what we're trying to get.
Yeah, I think that reminds me of Ready Player One. If you've read that book, they have the setup. So it's got the omnidirectional treadmill, and those became ubiquitous to everybody in that society. And so I think that would be interesting. VR is such a niche thing right now. It just terrifies me that people are so entrenched in their ways of, I sit on the couch with a controller, or I sit in front of my keyboard and WASD this thing, to ever break out of that. You know, there's such an entrenched, ingrained user base for these classic style of video games. And I think we've seen recently with some unique things in gaming where the early adopters got a bit punished for early adopting. You see people that early adopted on the Wii U, and now they're nobody's making games for that console anymore. It's just a dead console. So I think there are a lot of times in gaming where it's such a high cost to get in that you have to wait and see if it's going to be successful before you get in it, which then means that it's not going to be successful because no one's dropping the 600 bones up front.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that this future is interesting, and I'm
yeah.
I'm really intrigued to see where it goes. Because like you said, it's niche now.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens with it. So moving on, moving kind of the meat and potatoes, the last little bit of news here is Sebastian Stan, who plays Bucky Barnes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He plays the Winter Soldier. He was in an interview, and he strongly hinted that his character was going to be in the Black Panther movie. And I guess my only question is, this was a question? Like, didn't we already know that that was what was going to happen? Did he really need to hint it? Like, it's all but confirmed, right?
Yeah, and Raymond knows my overuse of literal, but that is literally my only note under this point on our rundown, is I didn't realize this was a question.
Yeah, I don't...
That was the most obvious setup I think we've ever seen in one of these stingers outside of Thanos being like, ha ha ha, I'm Thanos. It's the most on-the-nose stinger we've seen in a long time. So I think it's going to be a really cool team-up, because I think those are two of the more intriguing characters in the MCU. I think you know what you're going to get with Cap and Thor and Iron Man, but you don't necessarily know what you're going to get with Black Panther and Bucky because of the tension that's there between their characters and the plot to kill T'Chaka, excuse me, I almost said T'Challa, T'Chaka being pinned on Bucky. So I think it could be a really interesting dynamic. I would love to see a buddy cop film with those two. I think Chadwick Boseman and Sebastian Stan are fantastic. I think it'd be super interesting. And really, if you think about it, you may end up seeing Ulysses Klaue in there, played by Andy Serkis, who more Andy Serkis is not a bad thing. So I think, yeah, it could be really cool. But yeah, worst kept secret since I don't know if there's been a worse kept secret than this.
Yeah, they basically gave it away in the stinger. If you wanted it to be a secret, that was not the way to go about ending Civil War. I would have, before we move on though, you mentioned Sebastian Stan, who I do like. I like him a lot. He was in a NBC show with Ian McShane called Kings that nobody watched, that was really good.
Kings is really good.
And it didn't even last a season. And yeah. I still have no idea how that happened. Kings was really cool. It should have brought in the Christian crowd because it had some deep religious things going on. It should have brought in the fantasy crowd because it had some deep, kind of interesting fantasy things going on. And nobody watched that show. And I still am dumbfounded by it. I have no idea how nobody watched that show.
Yeah. I honestly think they didn't market it to the Christian crowd because it's loosely based around King David.
Yeah.
So I think if you market it to the Christian crowd, which, I am part of that group, I think you could really get them in with the, it's a modern adaptation of the story of King David, because that's one of the most famous biblical narratives that is out there. So I think that was a huge miss. It's a fantastic show. I had a roommate that turned me on to it a couple years back when I was still, living with people that weren't my wife. I think it was fantastic.
And the Christian market brings their wallet with them.
Yes.
Wherever they go. All you have to see is the God's Not Dead franchise and the fact that a second one of those movies exists to know the power of the Christian market. And so you're right. NBC made a massive. That's the only reason Kirk Cameron still exists, right?
They have a series of films that Kirk Cameron is the star of. Yes.
Oh, that's hilarious. But no, they bring their wallets, and that's really important. And NBC made a giant mistake. Sorry, you reminded me of it because we just saw Ian McShane in Game of Thrones, and it's. Love that show. I'm gonna go back and watch it again.
You should. All right,
so let's move back to Marvel, and this is kind of on the heels. My Southeast Texas just came out.
I was gonna say, Port Arthur represent.
Port Arthur, Texas represent it till I'm dead. It just came out. So there was a terrible Marvel ranking, and they ranked all the Marvel movies, not just Marvel Cinematic Universe, in the Hollywood Reporter. And I do rankings for a living. And so I am against coming down too hard on rankers, because after you get out of the top 25% of anything, it all becomes mishmash. I mean, they're all just mediocre. There's just slivers of hairs between every one of them. And so I never get mad at people who are ranking, you know, the bottom 75%. People think you put the 42nd person around above the 43rd person. Yeah, who cares, right?
Yeah.
But this list was so bad at the top. It had the Spider-Man franchise, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man franchise, represented two of the top five. Two-fifths of the top five was the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man franchise. Are you kidding me?
It's terrible. Like, it's awful.
It was, what is there to like about that? It was a terrible interpretation of the character. There were over-the-top villains with no real motivations. It was a forced and awkward love story. It was a stereotypical story arc. It had the most annoying Uncle Ben origin story of all of the millions of Uncle Ben origin stories that we've ever seen. And those are two of the top five.
I think the most redeeming thing for the original Spider-Man, I can sum up in two words: Willem Dafoe.
Exactly.
Willem Dafoe was fantastic. And J. Jonah Jameson was also the fantastic casting. Yeah, Guns McGee, 61-year-old man, could kick my tail to this day.
J.K. Simmons with
J.K. Simmons.
He's lifted those 20-pound dumbbells 1,000 times, apparently.
Guys, if you haven't seen the J.K. Simmons workout pictures, by the way, why is J.K. Simmons getting rip-roaring ready to go?
Zack Snyder, play? That's the answer.
Jim Gordon doesn't, unless they do it in Elseworld, where it's from the New 52 and Jim Gordon is Batman, there's no reason for Jim Gordon to be swole. Like, no reason whatsoever other than Zack Snyder misunderstands what comic books are. The list is really egregious. I mean, it's got so many terrible, and again, I hate, because it's all opinion, right? Every ranking is opinion, so it's hard to disagree with someone's opinion, but I disagree with this person's opinion in so many ways. I mean, I'm scrolling through the list. You've got the Dolph Lundgren Punisher you've got the first Fantastic Four in there, lower than Rise of the Silver Surfer, which seems weird because I think that those should be flip-flopped. You've got Ghost Rider in there twice with the Spirit of Vengeance, which was a better film, in my opinion, than the first one, because at least it was fun to watch. The first one was really dull.
There are Hulk movies,
yeah,
ahead of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, which should just never be the case.
Yeah, well, I think you've got, it looks like, honestly, they just threw a lot of movies in there together in groups where it's like, oh, these are the two bad X-Men movies, so we're going to put those together. Got Last Stand and Origins Wolverine, just putting those at 29 and 30. You've got Amazing Spider-Man 2, above Thor the Dark World, which Thor the Dark World wasn't a great film, but Amazing Spider-Man 2 was just terrible. Iron Man 3 is not great. I mean, it's just, I could go on and on about how bad this list is. I think we could split hairs about the X-Men First Class thing, but I'm a First Class apologist. I'll speak about that movie forever, but this list is a mess. Like, it's just a mess.
So, yeah. So we didn't want to go through and just go point by point about why this list was a mess, because we would be here all day. But what we did think would be interesting would kind of kick off of this list and say, what if we did a draft in which Gerald's going to pick first and we're going to pick the Marvel units. We're both going to get three picks, and then we'll see who ends up with the better pictures. And I think this is going to be an interesting idea, because I think you and I are going to disagree pretty strongly once we get past maybe the first two or three. So
yeah,
lay it on me. What's going to be the first pick in the Marvel, not even Marvel Cinematic Universe, every Marvel movie that's ever been made, what would be your number one pick if you had to pick one?
Man, I think I'm going to take the easy pick, the first round quarterback, and I'm going to go Winter Soldier.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Winter Soldier is the hands down number one. It's the guy coming out of USC with the prototypical right arm. This was the first comic book movie where I sat there and it wasn't a comic book movie. It was just a movie. It was the first time where I was like, it played around with genres, which was something that we hadn't seen before, because comic book movies were a genre before that. And this film was so good that it was a comic book movie that just also happened to be a spy thriller espionage thing going on. And the fact that it was good enough to, attract Oscar caliber talent, and Winter Soldier is hands down, I would say, the best Marvel movie, and I would put it to one of the top comic book movies ever made.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I mean, it's right up there with Christopher Nolan's Batman's.
Yep.
It was an exceptional movie. I always viewed it as a movie I'm sure we'll talk about, one of us will draft momentarily, might have started the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but this is the movie that really put the Marvel Cinematic Universe on the path where it is now, which was kind of culminated, hopefully not culminated, but kind of reached its conclusion a little bit with Civil War, which is my second pick, but is this idea that we're going to make a movie. We're not going to make a comic book movie. We're going to make a movie. And they really dealt with these ideas of friendship, and they had this conspiracy theory, which was really cool. Captain America wasn't rah-rah America anymore. He was asking questions, which continued on into Civil War. And so it was a really interesting idea in what they did. And like I said, second pick, which isn't surprising if you listen to some of the previous episodes of this podcast, is Civil War. We've talked at length about this movie. It's just such a good examination of these characters as humans. And so that's such an interesting idea for comic books and superheroes, to examine them as humans. It's one of the things that made, and I believe I said this when we were talking about it, it's one of the things that made The Watchmen so interesting, is that you're not examining these people as superheroes, you're examining them as humans, and that's a very fascinating idea. And Civil War did it really exceptionally well. And so that's easily my number two pick. Who you got at three?
At three, I'm going to go a little different, a little unexpected, and I'm going to go the first Thor film.
Oh.
I love the first
Going
Thor film.
Off the board.
Going off the board. This is one of those picks where the owner just likes the guy. But I am a Thor apologist. I think that is the most underrated film of not just Marvel's first phase, but of what they've made so far. It's visually striking. It's a beautiful film. And I think Kenneth Branagh was a perfect choice to direct that film, because he gets Shakespeare and theater, and that's what it was. It was a Shakespearean family tragedy is what it was. It's got the twists and the turns of your classic, mistaken identity and betrayal and heartbreak. It was just such a fantastic film. It was beautifully shot. You got great performances out of everyone in that movie. I absolutely, absolutely love the first Thor film, and it is my number two pick.
You have never been more like David Kahn in your entire life. Like, you're going to start taking four point guards in the first round, coming way off the board.
Way off the board on that one.
I agree with you. It was a good. It's the best Thor. I can say that. I can say that definitively.
You got a 50-50 shot, and one of them's real bad.
I can say it definitively. No, I thought I liked it. I thought it was a good movie, and I mean, there. It's not even on my list. There's a lot I take over it, but that's a good choice. I like it. I thought you were going to go with the one that I think I have to choose. I don't think I have much choice. I'm going to go ahead and guess you know which one it is.
I do.
And that's Iron Man. Is that the one?
That was one of the two that I have on my list.
I mean, you have to pay some respects to the movie that started the cinematic universe.
Absolutely.
You just do. And yeah. X-Men did good work before it, and Spidey was, whatever. And Spidey. The Hulk movies we should forget about forever. Yeah. But this was really the beginning. It had a huge movie stars attached to it. Robert Downey Jr., I guess maybe that was the first time they realized how important it is for the actor to really capture the character. Mm-hmm. And he captured the character so well. And you think about Iron Man now, and you don't think about anybody except Robert Downey Jr. He is Tony Stark. And it is such a good idea. Jeff Bridges was excellent as the big bad. He was really good in it. Gwyneth Paltrow seemed like a human, which is really hard to do for Gwyneth Paltrow. So it was,
hateful.
It was a really good movie. Favreau, obviously, I love. And yeah. So, you know, it started it all. It was a great movie. It really got this kind of star-studded cast. And so I think it's a pretty safe pick with my second pick.
It is a safe pick. I think the way to describe Iron Man in my mind is a breath of fresh air in a genre. You look at what superhero movies were before that film and then what they are now. That's one of those, what I like to call epic film, like E-P-O-C-H, using that form of the word. It's one of those films that changes the direction of a genre, and that's what it did. And so I think it's a fantastic pick. The other film that I thought you could be saying, Guardians of the Galaxy, is, this is very Marvel Phase 2 heavy, but whatever. Guardians.
I'll take us back in a second.
Okay. I feel like we should add a couple extras in here because I've got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, we'll do some honorable mentions.
Cool. Guardians is hands down, I would say, the most fun of the Marvel films. I would say I had such a blast watching that movie. It's just the characters are funny. The character moments are funny. I will never forget the first time during the prison escape where Rocket tells the guy to steal the leg. And I'm like, if he doesn't actually need this for his contraption, I'm going to lose my mind. And then he doesn't. And I could not stop laughing. Like, Bradley Cooper just crushed the delivery on that line. It's legitimately funny. It's legitimately heartfelt. You know, you get a little choked up when Star-Lord's reading the letter at the end from his mom. It was a little cheese-tastic in the end right before that. When he had the vision of, you know, reaching out his hand for his mom, that was a little much, maybe a little heavy-handed. But overall, I would say it was just fun, and that's what we were supposed to be. It was a fun film that you enjoyed watching, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I completely agree. The first thing I would say is I love Chris Pratt like McAdams loves Gosselin. I love him so much, and so I was obviously 100% in. I didn't pick it over Iron Man. I think it's a good movie. Like you said, it's super fun. It drags a bit in a few places, and the baddie is really not interesting or good. And so I thought a little bit about that. But like you said, it's so much fun. I don't know if it's the most fun movie because Deadpool was really, really fun.
Yeah.
But it was great. I completely 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
So so I promised to take it back a little bit. Let's take it back. The year was 2002. Wesley Snipes was not yet in prison. It had Norman Reedus and Ron Perlman in it, and it was called Blade 2.
Bro, that was my next. That was going to be one of my honorable mentions. Was Blade 2, and two of the points you made were two of my points. I have Ron, period, Perlman, period.
It's so awesome. That movie is great. I like the original Blade. I will ride or die with the whole Blade trilogy, Blade Trinity included. I don't even care that movie's terrible and that Triple H is awful. I care nothing about it. I love everything about this series. I hope now that Wesley, he's now out of prison, that we can have a Blade 4. I love Blade so much. And this was clearly the best Blade. He was working with the Vampire Castle to fight some big bad monsters. Those council ninjas were the truth. They were so legit. Wesley Snipes was Wesley Snipes at that. Like, he was peak Wesley. He maybe not peak. He might not be Demolition Man Wesley Snipes anymore. Yeah. But he was still
57.
Yeah, but he was still Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
And it was legit. I love that movie so. I'm not saying it was the best movie. There have been better movies, but that movie, I love that movie so much.
I actually spent a solid 5 minutes debating Blade or Blade 2 because I love both of those films so much. I think, honestly, that the Blade franchise is where I fell in love with the concept of comic book movies. Just seeing Wesley Snipes completely capture that character and get it. I mean, he can be wooden sometimes, which is weird because he's actually a really dynamic person. But I thought that was one of the better. Those two films are some of the better comic book adaptations you've seen. I think it's so good. You got Stephen Dorff in the first one playing your villain.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, and like I think I think that if we made a Twitter poll of Blade versus Underworld, and I love Underworld, don't get me wrong, but I think people would pick Underworld, and it's Blade. 100%. Yeah, Blade.
100% of the time. 100%. No, Underworld overrated. Clap, 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 clap. It is this weird mix of regular people like it and people that I like to talk to don't like it. And I think they're good films, but I don't think they're end all be all.
Oh no, they're not great.
No.
No, like they're TNT movies, which yeah. have a place.
If I ever want to watch a movie that I can fall asleep to, wake up and still know where I'm at, Underworld's great.
It's fantastic. It's a TNT yeah. movie. That's fine. Yeah. Movies can be TNT movies.
Movies are supposed to be fun. Yeah. They're supposed to be fun and watchable. That's what movies are.
Exactly. So I guess there were some that we missed. We can just go rapid fire. Deadpool. I didn't want to be too recency biased, but Deadpool was a lot of fun. And like you said, this Deadpool could be a transition movie. Yeah. It could be an epic movie, as you said. So it's interesting. Movie star charisma, grungy love story, wink nod, sophomoric humor, fun. It was good. And so I think that deserves an honorable mention for sure. You got any?
X-Men First Class is one of mine. It just, the casting was perfect of McAvoy and Fassbender. They're both great. Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique was fantastic. I think it really captured what that era of comics was. The uniforms were cool. The coming of age thing was cool. The back and forth, that's always been one of the things that's missing from, the X-Men films, is like, you know, academically that Magneto and Professor X were old friends, but that it showed that relationship. I thought the Wolverine cameo was hilarious. I thought that was great. But no, I think X-Men First Class would be one. And then my other one, which is another one off the beaten path, is Big Hero 6. It's a very loose adaptation of a Marvel property, but it is a Marvel film, so I snuck it in there because it's really good. It's a heartfelt, like, just, you see one of those kids movies that you're like, I really want my kids to see this, because it's really about what does it mean to be a hero? What does it mean to be heroic? What does it mean to stand up for what you believe in? What does it mean to deal with loss and grief? Like, it was some deep, heavy stuff about, early on in the first act, it's not a spoiler, the main character loses his brother and he goes through like the five stages of grief and it walks him through that. It's such a very deep film. I'm emotional in animated films, and so I got a little emotional at the end.
Just did them animated films?
Just mostly animated films. The greater culprits for me crying in a film are animated films. Like, I've cried in more, and like the end of Wreck-It Ralph, don't get me started. Like, I was a mess. But it's just a really good flick.
No, yeah, I don't see children's movies because I try to avoid children in my life in any possible way. And so that's one that I'm definitely gonna have to find streaming somewhere. But I will go and watch it. I'm gonna have some Netflix time in the near future, so I'll definitely watch that. I guess if I was gonna add one more, X-Men 1 and 2, yep. Like, those seem like important movies, and they were pretty well done, and they had some pretty decently big stars in there. Yep. So it was so those were obviously not X3, obviously not Last Stand.
No.
No. But the first two, they were pretty good. You got any other ones, or is that?
That was where I stopped.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good list. I think that's a pretty good list. And if you're new to the Marvel game and you never saw the Blade series, the Blade trilogy, do yourself a favor. They're so great.
If you don't want to watch all three of them, definitely watch the first two. The third one, you can take it or leave it. But
I take it. Thank you very much, sir.
Raymond takes it. I think it's good. But I won't make anybody feel obligated to watch it. But you do. I feel like you do owe it to yourself if you want to have a good breadth of comic book film knowledge to watch the first two, because they're both fantastic.
Yeah, I agree completely. All right, it's time for my favorite segment of the week. Don't sleep. So we have. Oh, I liked that.
That was good.
We're going to keep doing that.
Yes.
Don't sleep. So what do you have this week, Gerald?
I have another comic book this week, another a run of Iron Fist comics from 2006 to 2009 was when it was running, and it's called The Immortal Iron Fist. I just picked it up. I'm about two-thirds of the way through the first Iron Fist, or a set of it. You've got two collected editions that I picked up on Amazon because I'm a bad comic reader and I buy stuff on Amazon because I'm also a good budgeter and I like deals. But no, the whole crux of it is it gives you this, it sets the Iron Fist character in a in kind of an ancient struggle. In this mythos, there are seven capital cities of heaven is what they're called. And each of them has a champion. And the Iron Fist is the champion of the realm that Earth is in. And so he's transported to this mythical city, and he has to battle these seven other champions in a battle to the death, or not a battle to the death, but a battle of martial combat. And there are some deaths in there. But it also goes back and gives you a lot of like history of different people that have held the mantle of Iron Fist, because Iron Fist is one of those powers that is passed from person to person after you defeat the great dragon. You defeat a dragon in hand-to-hand combat, and then you become the Iron Fist, which is actually a really cool backstory. So it gives you some really cool backstory, gives you some really cool depth of the character. part of it was written by Ed Brubaker, who was the guy who brought back Bucky Barnes initially as the Winter Soldier, so that's what got me into it. but Iron Fist has always been a character that intrigued me, and he's kind of transforming into one of my favorite characters in this book, just because it's so it's such a cool take on the character. Danny Rand is funny. The animation is really good. The art is really good. Excuse me. And it's got some really cool. It's setting it in history. Got like ancient Mongolians. It's just a really cool read. It ran for 3 years. It ran right in the middle of the first Civil War in Marvel. So you'll see a little bit of that happening. So there could be some references that you don't quite get because of that. But I thought it was a cool break from that Civil War era of getting outside of this conflict of ideologies and saying, hey, there's a bigger deal here. And Danny Rand is the only one that can save us from it.
And there is going to be, I'm pretty sure there's going to be an Iron Fist Netflix show.
There is.
So if you're trying to get into that and you're trying to get ready for that, would that be a good intro into the character?
It would be. It has some really good just Iron Fist mythology in there. It tells you a little bit about, again, how you become the Iron Fist and who's been the Iron Fist before. So it's really cool. And again, the art is great. David Aja, I always say his name incorrectly. David Aja does a really good job of animating the character. It's legitimately funny. So yeah, I would check it out. If you're wanting to get into Iron Fist, it's a really good on-ramp.
I wanted to talk about a show that we've talked about before when it was launching, but this is before it premiered, and that is Preacher, which is on AMC, which Seth Rogen is a part of remaking. And we talked about it and what it was going to be. And through two episodes, I have to say I'm really happy with it. I'm really impressed by it. They're doing a really good job of keeping people, or keeping me at least, interested in the characters through two episodes without really revealing a lot, leaving a lot of bullets in the chamber about where they're going, which is something that was really interesting. The characters are very interesting. They're layered. You can tell it, but you don't really see what the layers are. They're not opaque, but they are very interesting. And they've done this kind of interesting thing where the main characters are very stylized, super stylized characters. And then there are still, though, these normal people walking among them, which is really an interesting idea. And what this show, at least the first two episodes, has reminded me quite a bit of is actually the second season of The Leftovers, which is an HBO show. The first season of The Leftovers is terrible and garbage, but you have to watch the first season of The Leftovers to get to understand the second season, which is really, really good. In fact, it was one of my favorite television shows of last year. So I would very much recommend watching The Leftovers if you get a chance to. But if you don't, it's got a lot of the same feel here in Preacher, and the way they're approaching the story, and the fact that you can tell that there's something deeper, but you don't quite know where it is, and the fact that the characters are very kind of stylized in interesting ways and are layered in interesting ways. So I recommend it a lot. I think it's a really good show, and I'm interested to see where they're gonna take it.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. Like I said, I've been out of the pocket for a couple of weeks. How's Dominic Cooper's accent?
It comes and goes.
Okay.
Like, it's one of those things that I've come to accept that it's going to be a little bit hit or miss. It's a lot like Rick in season one of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
By the way, you can't get... I understand that English accents and country accents are pretty close to each other.
Yeah.
But you can't just get an American to play these characters. We gotta go to the Brits every time.
Yeah, I don't know. I really wish we could get some. I feel like there are some actors in Texas that need a shot at something that could have totally killed the accent because that's just what they grew up with.
What's Ethan Hawke doing these days?
I don't know. I feel like you get McConaughey 10 years ago and he could totally crush Jesse Custer.
Before the McConaissance?
Before the McConaissance. Or even post-McConaissance. I mean, it could be a pretty good role for him. I mean, if he was 10 years younger.
It'd be a lot more philosophical.
It would be. I mean, but he True Detective, he was pretty philosophical.
You ever thought about why you drink?
That was good. That was good.
My McConaughey is just Bill Clinton.
that was philosophical, Raymond. My McConaughey is just Bill Clinton.
You know, what are you going to do? So I'm a very deep thinker about
you accent, are.
About impressions.
All right, all right, all right. Let's close
this
out.
All right. So that's it for us. If you listen this far, I assume it's because you liked the show. So if you did, make sure you go on, subscribe, rate, review, wherever you find it. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm at RM Summerlin. He's at GH Goodridge. We also have a Twitter account for the podcast at Two Woke Nerds. And until next time, stay woke.
Stay woke.